Welcome to Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Join us live each week as we journey into the world of passion. Want to live life passionately? Finding your passion could be the difference between living life in the everyday and living life with meaning and purpose. Take these weekly lessons into life and business. Interact with your host, Tony Lontis, and her Passion Project facilitator, Peter Wallman, as we conduct a passion mapping exercise with Tony live on air. Passion is everything. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Radio Tony and the Passion Project. And this morning we have the absolute delight of talking to Kathleen Jordan. And before I introduce Kathleen to you, I really just want to tell you a little bit about her story. So Kathleen decided that life was about continuous learning, which led her to her business, Intuitive Insights, with a focus on executive development, leadership coaching and community engagement. She's proficient with tools such as HeartMath Institute, Positive Psychology, Passion Mapping and World Cafe. Her motto is, in life lived, everyone faces adversity. No one's journey through life is easy and how you handle the adversity will determine your future. And the title of today's interview is called The Power of Passion and Intention in Creating the Life You Want and Winning Against Odds. So Kathleen, I'm really delighted to have you on Radio Tony today, and I'm so pleased that we've been able to get you on eventually. So how are you? I know that you were a little stressed this morning and I'm so sorry about that, but live radio can be quite stressful, you know, and it's not just you. Many people coming on live radio, and this is particularly nerve-wracking because we're streaming live as well. So how are you, Kathleen?
I'm really well, and I'm so delighted to be talking to you about one of my passions, which is Passion Maps.
It's a wonderful concept, isn't it? Yes. Before we delve too much more into Passion Maps, I really want to tell our audience about you because you're very special, Kathleen. So tell me a little bit, and at the cornerstone of your current story is a battle with a nasty stroke. And reading parts of your story quickly yesterday, my nursing brain was going, oh, that's not good. So can you tell our listeners today, start about what your life was like before the stroke, and then we'll lead into talking about what happened at that traumatic time in your life.
Well, I was very independent and I was loving the work I was doing. I was traveling around the world, places like Bahrain, Hong Kong, New Zealand, and all around Australia. And and I was also in America with Peter's wonderful program. I had the joy of working with couples and helping them develop their relationship maps. I was just loving doing that in Arizona. It was fabulous. Yeah. And I was traveling all around Australia as well, running community engagement programs, as well as leadership development programs. Then on the 23rd of August in 2011, all of this stopped when I had the stroke. I should have said I was also enjoying going down to the West Country to my grandchildren and son-in-law. I was having a wonderful, I was just jumping in the car and going wherever I wanted to go, living a great life. And all of a sudden it stopped. And I was in hospital.
Kathleen, did you have any of the warning signs that we hear about?
Not really. But I had blood pressure, which was being controlled by medication and meditation. And so, no, I didn't really have any warning signs at all. I know I was very stressed on the day.
Yes.
That's probably what caused the stroke.
I'm so glad that you were in that space on that day in the children's hospital and so close to the adults hospital, because that was key in getting you medical assistance really quickly.
Yes.
And reading about the early part of your stroke story and understanding from my nursing and medical background just what you were going through, it really brought home to me the importance of family being there in those first few days to advocate on your behalf, because there's no way that you could on behalf of yourself.
Well, I'd lost my speech by then anyway.
Yes.
So there's no way I could have. I was just so lucky. I had my four sisters, two daughters, everybody was there with me, and I felt reassured, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So you had this big, beautiful life, travelling all over the place. You were doing lots of wonderful things, and then the stroke hits, and you go through the various stages of the recovery of the stroke, and you have to go into rehab. How long did you spend in rehab?
I was 18 months, really. Yeah. But I'm still in rehab. I still have to have physio and hydrotherapy and what have you. But I was in hospital for 2 years, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're incredibly complex medical issues to manage around stroke, because it involves your brain, and then because it involves your brain, it involves the rest of your body, your walking, your talking, your thinking. So you had to effectively relearn how to talk and walk and all of those things, didn't you, Kathleen?
I certainly did, and I'm still having to, because it's left me partially paralyzed down the left side. I'll never drive a car again, for instance. So, my independence has been totally and utterly,
gone. Yes. Are you still able to live by yourself with some external assistance, or how does that work for you, Kathleen?
Yes, I'm living in a wonderful retirement community in my own apartment, which is wonderful. And I've got lots of friends in the building who are not. I don't need them to come and help me, because I have many carers coming. It's like the United Nations, actually. I have carers coming from Japan. I don't mean they're coming from Japan.
I know what you mean.
Japanese.
Yes.
Philippines, Nepalese, Pakistani, and Indian, and one carer actually is Croatian, but she is very Australian now. So, as I say, I've got the United Nations looking after me. I'm very lucky to have
That's wonderful.
But without all that, I would be in a nursing home. But I am able to live independently in my beautiful apartment, yes.
And that in itself is incredible for our listeners. Recovery from stroke is not assured, and it's individual in different people. And so to see Kathleen here on our Zoom call being interviewed live on air after such a massive right-sided stroke, I might add, and right-sided strokes are way more tricky than left-sided strokes. So to see her and have her on the show is a really big privilege. And so I want to go on to tell people how you got involved with Passion Mapping, and then we'll talk a little bit also about your book, because it's wonderful.
Did you want me now to say something?
No, that's okay. How did you get involved with Passion Mapping?
Well, I was doing a lot of one-on-one counselling.
Yeah.
coaching, not counselling, coaching.
Yes.
And Peter Wallman rang me and said, I'd like to meet you and have lunch. By the end of lunch, I had signed up to do my own passion map, and which I have on a number of occasions I have refreshed. And the last time I refreshed it was just before the stroke. I was in Arizona with Peter and a lot of other passion mappers like me.
Yes.
We were doing a wonderful program, which is where I first did a relationship map. And where have I got to? We're in Arizona. I refreshed my map, and I came up with that my intention in life is to bring love and generosity and inspiration to the world. And that is what I have continued to believe in. That my map has just helped me through. My book is the physical journey, and it's also the emotional journey. Well, the emotional journey is to focus on focusing on my life intention, which I've just said. And that is why I wrote the book, because although I could no longer do 2-hour coaching sessions, for instance, I could still contribute to the lives of others by writing the book.
Yes,
what I've done. I had a wonderful co-author who helped tremendously, but it is my story. Oh, thank you.
I'm going to blot out my face and see if you can see Kathleen's beautiful book, which is called Standing Up, My Story of Hope, Advocacy and Survival After Stroke. And it's Kathleen's book, and it's written with Vicky Stegall. And I've already started reading it, so you'll notice that the pages are a little bit thumbed. So sorry about that. So, Kathleen, you have this beautiful website, and I looked at it yesterday, and it's got all of your information and the details of your book and what your book's about. Can you tell me, so you're not really retired, are you? You're just living in a retirement home.
Living in a retirement home, you've got to be able to look after yourself with help in a retirement home. And I'm sort of not retired, because I'm no longer running Intuitive Insights. I'm now much more interested in sales of the books, with the money going to the Macaulay Community Services for Women.
And what does the Macaulay what does it do?
Macaulay Community Services for Women, it looks after people, women and their children escaping family violence, and also women who are homeless. So it's become a passion of mine to support it. Because my daughter was working there when she tragically died at the age of 37. She was running a program, instituted a program to help children who are escaping family violence, helping children develop resilience through meditation and various other tools that she was trained in.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And so Macaulay is a passion of mine, because it keeps her legacy alive.
Alive.
It's terribly important to me.
Yes.
So, for instance, rather than birthday presents and Christmas presents, I ask family and friends to donate to Macaulay. Yes.
And they can do that by your website as well, can't they, Kathleen?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. It's a while since your daughter passed away, isn't it?
5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not a long time, really, is it? And did you find that being involved with what she was involved also aided in your recovery?
Well, it was more my, the tools that I've been using with my clients, I was starting to use on myself.
Yeah.
For instance, there's one called saying hello again, and which just briefly, because people can Google it, or they can read my book and see a bit about it. Saying hello again is about, I think to myself, how would Lucinda expect me to be behaving at the moment?
Yes.
And in fact, I keep this lovely photograph of her. I'll put it over my face for a minute.
Oh, Kathleen, that's beautiful. Isn't she gorgeous?
Oh, yes. And she was a gorgeous person as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I talked to that photograph, and I said, okay, what should I be doing now? And her spirit is always with me, and she gives me the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what saying hello again is. It's who would get the person that you mourn, how would you expect them? How would they want you to be is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. So all of that must keep you pretty busy. How do you manage to fit it all in?
Well, because I've got physio and hydrotherapy and remedial massage as well.
Yeah.
But at the moment, of course, we're all locked down and we can't do that.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's very frustrating. It's frustrating for everybody, of course.
Yes.
But and I do have Zoom meetings with my grandchildren, which is wonderful.
Yes. So you've seen your grandchildren? Because I know for me, Kathleen, I missed my grandson like so much. Even seeing him on FaceTime and video call, it just wasn't the same as him in my space, and you know that child exuberism that just lights you up, and how much they love their grandparents.
Oh yes, that's right. At least there is some connection with Zoom and FaceTime. Yes.
Yes.
But I'm missing them all big time. Yes.
Yes, yes. We only saw our grandson, who is almost 4, after 3 months last weekend for Mother's Day, because they kept their distance all that time, and then we just he came because we've got a farm, and we have goats and llamas, and he's been around those animals since he was a baby. And so he come to see Nanny and Poppy and the goats and llamas, and he was happy again. So the grandkids haven't been able to visit you, just the Zoom and FaceTime?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're able to keep up with the Institute's work and help women and children via Zoom still? You're able to talk to people?
Well, at the moment it's more just telephone, really. I think a FaceTime would be a good idea with them, yes. But I have lots of other passions, and that's ballet and opera and music as well. All of which, of course, is on hold at the moment.
Yes.
And although I've got lots of friends in this building, we are all self-isolating. Anyway, life will get back to normal. Have to be hopeful and optimistic. Two of my main passions. I should hold up my passion map.
Yes. I was just going to say, have you got your passion map there so that we can have a look?
Yes, we can. Yeah. It's a great big exclamation mark.
Oh.
And it's, and then I'll tell you the different things that I sort of draw on all the time.
Fantastic.
That this helped me get through. I've got hope and courage as two of my passions.
Yeah.
I've got universal happiness, abundance, So abundance of love and I've got generosity of spirit is a huge one for me.
Yes, yes.
Joyful intimacy is another one.
Yeah.
And so is unconditional love.
Oh.
Oh, and also there's also one that is the sense of the ridiculous. I've always had a rather quirky sense of humour.
Yes.
And I also like to reframe things. And I got myself quite miserable one day because I thought I'm probably going to have care for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, okay, Kathleen, how are you going to reframe this to stop feeling miserable about it? And I clicked my fingers and I thought, I know, the Queen of England has her ladies in waiting. Why shouldn't Kathleen Jordan have them? So I know I started calling my lovely carers my ladies in waiting, but it didn't go down very well.
So they didn't like that idea at all.
Well, a couple of them thought it was funny, but I think some of them couldn't understand what I meant. As I said, I've got the United Nations coming through.
Yeah, yeah. It's fabulous to hear that you have such a wonderful quality of life now and that you can enjoy that quality of life for a long time to come, and you can continue to indulge in your passions for as long as you like.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So what sorts of things do you have on your things that you'd like to accomplish in the next little while? Is there anything in particular, any of your passions that you want to expand on further or do something more with?
I want to start playing bridge again.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, of course, that's not allowed at the moment because you've got four people sitting at a table using the same cards and it's just not allowed.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get back to bridge soon. And I'm longing to get back into the hydrotherapy pool.
Yes.
As well. And of course, ballet and opera will be probably next year, won't be this year now.
Oh.
But what they are doing is they're streaming some of their programs, which I watch.
Yes.
Which is wonderful, yes. So, look, yes, life is very busy, although I do have physiotherapy in my apartment as well. Life is busy, and yes, it's happier. And I'm happy because I've got Emma and the children and sisters who love me.
Yes.
I'm a very lucky person. I've got all sorts of wonderful things in my life.
Yes.
And any of the gaps are the same as that everybody else has got. Not being able to jump in a car and go off where you want to go to.
Part of your care, though, includes getting you to the places that you need to go in terms of, So you're pretty happy with your own personal passion mapping. What sorts of things can you tell our listeners about the reasons why your passion map has been so helpful to you?
Well, I would when I was in hospital, for instance, once I could actually think again and talk and speak, which actually that came back reasonably quickly, I would again say to myself, how can I let people know that I'm grateful for the help that they're giving me? So gratitude became a very important passion for me to begin to. And what else? As you can see, after a little while of concentrating, I get very tired.
I can, yes. And that's part, a normal damage. Part. Yeah.
Brain damage.
Because you also had to have surgery as well after the stroke.
Yes, that's right.
To help, yeah.
So that they, it was a hemorrhagic stroke, and I had I had a lot of blood. They had to remove in my brain, and I think they took some of the neurons away as well. Fortunately, they left me enough to be able to write a book and play bridge.
I was just going to say that's pretty impressive that you were able to remember so much of your experience with stroke and then be able to put it down on paper with the help of Vicky, because the bit that I've read is wonderfully fascinating, although quite scary. It would have been really very scary in those early few days after the stroke.
Yes, it was. I had to tap into my passion of hope and also courage. I had to remind myself that I'm a winner. I don't have to let this ruin my life. But there was a lot of struggling with that as well.
I was going to say, and it also didn't help that some of the medical practitioners around you in that early part of your stroke were not very positive. They were quite negative, in fact, in their diagnosis and their thoughts around your condition.
Well, they told my sister, who is a doctor, and my daughters, that the best they could hope for me was to be spend the rest of my life as a vegetable in a nursing home.
Dear.
And that was just not going to happen. My family were not going to let that happen.
Yeah. Do you remember hearing them say that, or did your sister and family tell you afterwards that that was the diagnosis?
I'm not certain. I don't think they did tell me that.
Because
that would have been just too much like a hit in the stomach, really.
Absolutely. You
know? I don't think they did tell me, but I know that they became even more of an advocate than they have been already, you know, very much so.
And that whole concept of advocacy is so important anywhere within the medical sphere in terms of making sure that you are treated as a human being versus a stroke victim. And it makes a difference to your treatment. Once the people that are caring for you see you as a vibrant, valuable, wonderful human being, it makes it more real for them, and you're not just about your stroke. You're about the beautiful, wonderful Kathleen that's underneath what you're suffering at the moment. And they then are more invested in getting you better and the best that you can be. So that advocacy becomes incredibly important when people are in the early stages of something that debilitates them, where they can't communicate and tell people that, hey, I'm still here.
Yes. Well, that, what you've just said is exactly what Petrina, my sister, said to them. You've just got to understand that Kathleen is a fighter, and she will be back.
She will fight this. And I think in reading the early part of your story, I think that that was a key moment that probably changed the trajectory of the outcome for you. And I have to say, it's been beautiful to meet you. I haven't finished your story, but I have started it, and my nursing brain is very much tacked into all the things that you were saying around care and advocacy and all of those things that we still don't do very well, do we, Kathleen?
Well, I think we need someone to do it for us.
Yeah.
In fact, lots of people have said to me, how would people have survived without their families? And my answer to that is, I do not know.
I don't think. Yeah, no. I agree. If you've not got people around you that are advocating and battling on your behalf, then the outcomes are not often very good at all. So, Kathleen, thank you so much for coming on Radio Tony today. We're about to go on live with Peter if he comes back into view soon. I know that he wants to talk to you. Here he is. Thank you. I'm so sorry that we had a few little technical issues getting you, but you have been magnificent live on the show today. Wonderful to hear your story. And I'm going to pop this little book up on in front of my face for a moment, because one more plug for Kathleen's beautiful book. It's called Standing Up, My Story of Hope, Advocacy and Survival After Stroke. And it's by Kathleen Jordan and Vicky Stegall. And proceeds from this wonderful book go to help with women and children fleeing domestic violence and abuse, which is an incredibly important thing to be involved in. So I'm going to hand over to Peter for a few words. Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Thank you, Tony. And if you're ever in Melbourne, come and meet me. I'd love to see you. Good.
I would love to see you too.
Okay.
Peter, did you want to say goodbye to Kathleen?
Yeah. Hello and goodbye, Kathleen. Lovely to listen to you. And lovely to see you. I don't get to Melbourne much, as you know, but the times that I saw you during your recovery was extraordinary. Mm. Just to talk about a fighting spirit you have. Mm. And I think I've told you that, you know, the fact that Passion Maps could play a part in your recovery was a big part of my coming back and restarting the business, because I thought if it can help with you as a stroke victim, it sure, certainly can help with others. And don't I just have a responsibility to get it out there? So, you know, there's a big silver lining for me in terms of your stroke, and an extraordinary appreciation, gratitude for you and your fighting spirit. You know, it's just fabulous. A lot of people are suffering from different things these days, and the story sort of crosses not just stroke victims, but other people suffering different things. So thank you. Lovely to see you. And I hope to be in Melbourne.
Well, I look forward to seeing you, Peter, and thank you for those kind words.
Okay. And I know that I've worn you out after that interview, so we'll let you go, or you can stay as long as you like, Kathleen.
Okay, I'll stay and listen.
Okay.
I'll stay and listen.
Okay, good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Nice to see you again. It's been a long time since yesterday.
What, 12 hours? So for our listeners, Peter and I, I'm doing my own passion map, and the purpose of doing it in this format is so that we can take people on my journey as we discover what I'm passionate about. And so yesterday, Peter and I did the next stage in that passion mapping process, and I'll let Peter tell you a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, I think what I've done previously is to show the viewers where we are in a big process. So I'll just share my screen here, and we are going sliding down the deep dive model, going deeper and deeper into, or Tony's going deeper and deeper into herself. So we've been through, I think this is the fourth session, haven't we? And we've got down to the passion mapping part.
Yeah.
So that's a place where you really feel your essence. But I think it was just a real joy to work with you. And
thank you.
And I remember at the end you said, "Are we done? That was so easy."
I keep expecting it to be a little bit more difficult, but it's not. It's relatively painless. And that's a good thing.
Well, it's sort of non-invasive. People think it might be therapy, or it might be it might be counselling, or it might be us telling you how to live your life. And it's actually
not
that at all. It's about helping you to, or guiding you to, your own inner wisdom and inner knowledge. picking up those gems, those treasures from deep inside, and then bringing them back into the world again. So that's what
I found. Sorry, Peter.
No, that's, I'd like to hear what you're, where you're at now with, after sitting with this for a little while.
What I found most fascinating for me was the bodily reaction to the words that we were using, and the difference between words that resonated and words that didn't. So when Peter and I were going through the exercise, I had different elements. And in assessing how my body reacted to certain words. So can I use an example, Pete?
Of course, yeah.
So one of mine, passions is moments of joy and gratitude.
And try probably and say that without getting a smile on your face.
See? And that was the same reaction when I was tapping into how my body felt when I said those words. So moments of joy and gratitude for me are one of my highest passions, and I can feel it in my body. Now, before, having never done anything quite like this before, it sort of connected a lot in yesterday's session, that the words that I was saying actually had a bodily reaction, which meant that they were perfect for me. And one of the other one of the other ones that I remember that had a strong bodily reaction was one that I've called unconditional goat love and joy. And again, it just makes me smile. And that was a really big thing for me to understand, that I would know what these passions were simply by the way that my body was reacting. And there's other ones in there like Radio Tony and Curious Fascination with the World. And they all had different bodily reactions. Another one of my passions is around seeking justice and seeking truth. And that was a different reaction. So the joy and gratitude kind of comes from a feeling up here, and the injustice and seeking truth comes from the middle of my stomach and around my heart and up into my chest. And I found that fascinating, that when I found the right words that matched my particular passion, there was a definite body response. And I didn't realize that would be such a strong response and such a lovely process to walk through, because you are talking about things that you are aligned with, that mean something to you, and they're very unique and individual to you. So getting those words right, and Peter helped me through that process. Like, he would suggest, does this sound better or does that sound better? Does this make you feel better or how does that make you feel? And it was quite easy to determine, no, that sounds better and makes me feel better than that group of wordings. And so, like, it's just such a lovely process. And so in our next session, I'll have made up my little passion map with the start of what we worked on yesterday. And I'm equally looking forward to what that might look like, because as we interview different passion mappers on the show before Peter and I talk, I get to see what their passion maps look like. And I'm beginning to more and more understand the imagery around people's individual passion maps. So Kathleen's just there was like an exclamation mark. And then as she's describing it, it absolutely suits everything that she's about and everything that she's passionate about. And so there's a real power in clarity of what you're passionate about, isn't there, Peter?
Yeah, and I think you expressed that really well. And one of it actually takes me back to the first time that I ever got involved with anything like this.
Yeah.
You know, my life was falling apart at the time, and I was working with another guy who said, on a consulting job. And he said, he was actually a doctor as well. And he said, Peter, before we work on this job, can we work on you? Which is a great vote of confidence, of course, in my state of being. But it was true. I needed to. And I was in that place of, you know, the past gone and the future hasn't arrived yet. And it's hard to know, even if you pick up a glass of water, whether you move it from to here or to here. You know, it's there's no ground to sort of live from. And that was the start of it, because I he said, look, I think what you should do is write up all the things that are important to you. He was interested in Gestalt therapy. Write them up. We put them on a whiteboard. I moved them around and around, but it didn't sort of go anywhere. You know, it was like intellectually they were all bits and pieces. And then the wind came in, actually. I lived near the harbour and a sea breeze came in and blew a couple down off the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. And I stood on one and I had this really strong movement sense in my body.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, this is just being angry.
Yeah.
I was frustrated because I couldn't make any sense out of just getting a pattern of all those things. And then I stood, and then there was, happily, if it hadn't been two, that would have been it. But there was a second one, and I stood on that, and it was a totally different experience. And I thought, wow, you know, like, how can this be that I can just stand on a few words on a piece of paper and it can completely activate my body? Now, at the time, I was doing heaps of yoga. And I think yoga is very good for getting body awareness.
Yes.
So then basically that was the start of it. And we, you know, started playing with the ideas and then imagining what would it be like if we could capture all of the ways that we did this. And then the name changed to Passion Map. So I started exploring passion.
Yeah.
And in fact, what you're talking about is really the difference between motivation and passion. You know, our heads tell us one thing, but our bodies tell us another.
Yes.
And sometimes they're totally aligned, but often they're quite different.
Not.
And so I used to, you know, I went on this sort of journey into what's passion.
Yeah.
And I did work with groups all over the place, all over the world, and I'd ask them what's passion. And everyone has a different idea, you know, intellectually, everyone has a different idea. But if you ask people how they feel when they feel passionate, then there's very common themes.
Yes.
And you know, it's, and the most common is just energy in the body. And I came to the conclusion, well, you can't really work with passion unless you're working with energy in the body.
Yeah.
And there are lots of people who claim to be working with passion, but I don't believe they are, because they're working with their intellect.
Yes.
And that's different.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that was the genesis of it. So, you know, it was wonderful that you had, you know, you had body awareness. But I also noticed as you got going, you know, the first few were a bit weird because you're not used to doing that.
Yes, yeah.
But towards the end, you got on a roll and you just, they all popped, you know, just the correct phrases came up. Yeah. And it's very exciting as a coach or facilitator. Every one of the pops, when you get that phrase that just absolutely brings you alive.
And you just don't, it's really fascinating because it is. It's like, ah, that's it. No, that doesn't work. Ah, that works. And it's very uniquely around the wording. And it's unique to that person. I'm sure it's unique to everyone. So we can have similar passions. But the wording around those passions is absolutely unique to the person doing the map. And I thought that was just such a lovely process. And when you combine it with that, I'll call it a meditative process, because when you go into that space where you shut everything else out of your world and just focus on finding your particular passions, and then at the end, the anchoring in of what it feels like, those things are important, I think, for your unconscious mind as well as your intellectual mind.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the issues here is that we don't feel most things, you know, like yeah. most of those bodily, you know, embodied reactions, we don't yeah. feel. And especially yeah. if we live in cities, because there's so many sensory inputs that we have to shut ourselves down.
Yes.
You know, there's so much noise that we shut our hearing down. There's so much advertising signs we have to stop seeing things.
Social media, the world. Standing.
So our senses close right down.
Yeah.
Now you're fortunate that you live in a, you know, on a farm.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen for you, and so your capacity to notice those feelings is higher than someone in the city yeah. would be in the city. So you know, in the process we run, we do a, you know, need to take people to a place where they are really in tune with what's arising for them. How's yeah. that energy of passion arising for them?
Yeah.
And that's a particular place. It wasn't yeah. hard for you to get there. It takes a while for some people in the city who've just come out of a stressful meeting or whatever to do
which
that.
Is, and that's precisely why you normally do this process in a face-to-face manner. And so it's a bit experimental doing it via Zoom and online versus doing it in person. So my experiment, you using me as an experiment to see how it works on Zoom, I guess it's going to be about whether we can get the particular person doing their passion map to quiet their mind so that they can tap into those bodily reactions to their passions, isn't it? And that's yeah, easier to do when they're segregated, they're taken away from their normal life.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting you should mention that, because we've actually found it pretty, pretty good results.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the advantages of everyone shut down is they have much quieter minds.
Yes.
You know, they're more connected with themselves. They're considering what is important for them, because they can't do it. They need to think about it. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that changes after this lockdown.
Not only do I get the pleasure of working with you doing this passion mapping process, it coincides with a period of time that we've never experienced before, when everyone's been in lockdown, forced to stay home, move their stuff online. And for me in particular, it's absolutely made me clarify what's important to me and the importance of being slower and not being so busy and taking time out have all been highlighted to me in such a way as to like stop me doing all the busyness that I used to do. That's going to be powerfully important coming out the other side of COVID.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's, combining that with what will be my passion map will absolutely drive what happens in terms of what I want to do business-wise and life-wise in the future. So I feel incredibly grateful for this time. And I know that there's a lot of people struggling, and particularly when you talk to people like Kathleen, who by virtue of them being in care, and they can't go and see the grandkids, and the grandkids can't come and see them, and all those sorts of things. But she's still managing to get that beautiful message of hers out about how her passions still drive her life despite all the things that she's been through. She still has that roadmap of what to hang on to. And that's what I'm looking forward to, having that roadmap that will help guide everything that I do in the future. So if it doesn't align with what I've developed on my map, then is it really important? Can I let it go? Probably.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the place that Kathleen's in. If it's not on her map, why do it? That's what brings her alive.
I've heard that from a number of our interviewees so far, that if they look at their map and if it's not on their map, they can easily just say no, and it's no drama anymore. Those decision-making processes are assisted by that clarity around what drives the passions in their life, makes life simpler for them, a lot of them have said.
Yeah, I think so. I think the process validates us.
Yeah.
You're going through these different phrases, that all of which activate you in some way, and you can't argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't argue with the way that you feel. You can't say, I don't feel the way I feel, but you can argue with what you think.
Yes.
And in fact, a lot of depression, I think, is these arguments in the head about, going round and round or down and down. So in the process of all of those embodied responses and then bringing them together, although we don't talk about it, I think most people have a deep sense of self-validation. Hey, this is me. This is absolutely me. That's what's important. It can be a roadmap to live my life from.
Yeah.
It might change a bit from time to time. But and the other thing that comes up for me, Tony, is the self-talk.
Yes.
You know, what you realize from this is just everything you say, everything you even you hear, has an impact on you physically.
Yes.
And I think a lot of that leads to illness if it's not managed.
Yes.
So, people don't realise that the language they use is actually impacting their body at that instant.
Yes.
And in impacting that, that's actually influencing their health.
Yeah.
So when I started this work, I had no interest in taking it into the health space, but I think there's a real role in that to play.
I do, especially after talking to Kathleen this morning.
Yeah, I think she's a pretty amazing woman.
Yeah, definitely.
And I actually went to the hospital not long after she'd had a stroke. She could hardly move.
Yeah.
And I think her sister must have put her passion map on the wall.
Yeah.
Because she had it right next to her in the ward, and she mumbled about it when I saw her. To see her now. And probably the fact that she was supposed to be on the not to be resuscitated list.
Yes.
And you wonder how many people
there's lots
in that situation. And she had the capacity to say, this is me. This is what's important. This is what I'm going to aim for. And you heard her talk about that in the interview. I was very moved because I was sort of, I was dropping in on her from time to time.
Yeah.
Period. And just seeing her. Oh, it was tragic to see her first off. I mean, I got tears in my eyes thinking about it.
Yeah.
But she's, and I'm very proud that she actually used, even with all of what was going on, she had the sense to actually use that, and she'd worked with me on a lot of programs, so it's still very sad to see her as she is, but it's also quite inspiring as well.
She is an incredible example of the power of the mind. Even a fractured, broken mind, still powerful.
Yeah, and the power of intention.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, we're just about out of time, Peter. I've just looked at the clock and thought, we've been chatting away.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to the next one. The next one, we're going to answer the question of, so what? You've got to this place, now so what?
Before we go, we need to mention that there's a wonderful video on passionmaps.com/free. It's the next in the series of videos by Peter, and it's our giveaway for today. And before we completely run out of time, Kathleen, if you're still listening, what a pleasure to have you on Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Peter, as always, I adore working with you and doing this process live online. And to all our listeners and watchers out there, thank you so much for tuning in to Radio Tony and the Passion Project this week. And we will be back next week to join you all for another episode of Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Over to you, Don. Thank you for joining us on Radio Tony this week. Tune in next week for the next episode of Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Live streaming each week, part of the journey. Discover your passion, learn about your purpose, and connect with Tony and Peter. This show is proudly brought to you by Passion Maps. https://www.passionmaps.com. That's www.passionmaps.com. Live passionately every day. Use the code TONY to register for your own online deep dive program with Passion Maps. See you all next week. Bye for now.